Alula Engida, the greatest of the Ethiopian generals, quarrels with an old rival, Ras Hegos of Tembien. The two fight on January 15, 1897, and Alula kills Hegos. The old general, now almost 70, sustains a gunshot wound in the leg. He dies on February 15. Ras Mangesha governs Tigray. He still believes he is the rightful emperor of Ethiopia, Negus Neges, Emperor Yohanes' rightful heir. Mangesha rebels against Menelik. Menelik defeats Mangesha and imprisons him in 1899. He dies in 1906 in captivity. Ras Makonnen, Menelik's cousin, continues to govern Harar province. He dies on March 21, 1906, after he comes down with typhus. His son, Tafari Makonnen, is later crowned Emperor Haile Selassie II. He will be the last emperor. Menelik accelerates his modernization program. He suffers a stroke in 1906 and is semi-paralyzed. Empress Taitu is the effective power thereafter. Menelik dies on December 12, 1913. Taitu's powers begin to wane, and she is eventually sidelined by the courtiers. She dies on February 11, 1918. The couple is buried next to each other in Beata Le Mariam, or St. Mary's Church, in Addis Ababa. Adwa remains Africa's greatest victory against white supremacy and European imperialism. The end. Listeners, supporters of WBAI, your copy for $100 by dialing
212-209-2950.
Correct.
Give to WBAI.
That's all the time we have today. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. We hope you respond positively to our fund drive and keep your listener-supported station going on. Thank you, Brother Adesoyi, joining us all the way from the United Kingdom.
It's a pleasure.
Fund drive. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Comrade Colin. That's all the time we have. Remain Pan-African. See you soon.
An encore presentation of the Black Star News Show. This is WBAI in New York, just a minute or so past the top of the hour. We're going to be going to the next program, which usually is Heart of Mind with Catherine Davis, Fridays at 11 a.m. Just a word about Milton's book, Adwa, Empress Taitu and Emperor Menelik in Love and War. You have to get this book because it's not just about the war and the battles between the Italians and the Ethiopians. It's not just that. It's not just that. I mean, because during the courtship, or Menelik was trying to talk to, if you will, use the modern terms, Empress Taitu, he fell off the horse and almost killed himself. He wanted to speak with and actually marry Empress Taitu. It's a fascinating story. It's wonderfully illustrated, and it's supporting radio station WBAI. Well done, Milton Alamadi. Thank you so much for tuning in. Upcoming, The Gary Knowles Show at noon, so stay tuned. We have more straight ahead.
The war on cancer lies in the strategy of the people who are leading the fight. Their view of the disease is determinedly myopic. To them, cancer is a localized disease represented by the tumor. By cutting it out, poisoning it with chemotherapy, or irradiating the tumor, the traditional oncologist attempts to kill it in order to save the patient. The allocation of research funds depends upon who controls this battle. Unfortunately, the same small group of individuals and institutions, only about 30, have virtually monopolized, for the past 40 years, the entire budget of cancer research. They dictate who gets what. Hence, any new innovative therapies suggesting that cancer may in part be due to our thoughts, our polluted environment, our adulterated and denatured diet, are excluded from funding.
In the 1970s, it was Nixon that coined the term war on cancer. It was recognized that cancer was a big problem, and at the time, it was thought that viruses were the major cause of cancer. So to be a virologist at the time was very well looked upon. But the thinking was that if we could put a man on the moon with that great knowledge and technology, perhaps if we could have that same level of technology, the war on cancer, we could find the cause of cancer. But we know now, at least overall type of thinking, is that there isn't a single cause or factor of cancer. Viruses certainly have some role in certain types of cancers, but certainly so does genetic factors, and so does our stress levels, and so do our individual needs for certain nutrients. So I think the problem with this war on cancer concept was that its focus was still on treating cancer once you had cancer. There was no emphasis whatsoever placed on the prevention of cancer. And I think that's the most important area to focus on, prevention.
And welcome back. And I am hoping that you have stayed tuned for another edition of Gary Knowles Show. And we are going to be talking to you today about how you can make a tremendous difference in your life, in your health, and in your well-being. And I do believe that most of us know Gary Knowles very well, but for those people who may have lived off the beaten path, Gary Knowles is a PhD. He's a New York Times best-selling author, the host of the talk radio program The Gary Knowles Show, and a producer of documentary films, PBS television programs, and health and professional development videos. And we are going to be sharing with you today an opportunity not only to learn from Gary Knowles and the work that he's offered, but to support WBAI, the very radio station on which he has broadcast for probably more years than any of us want to remember. But we are going to be speaking to you about overcoming cancer, the five most powerful tools for fighting cancer. And this is a book by Gary Knowles, and that comes along with a DVD, Cancer Alternative Approaches. And so this is really going to be so exciting because we all have family members, if not even ourselves, who have worked with these challenges. And just to start off, let me give you that pledge line, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and you can make a pledge of $100 and receive both the book and the DVD. And we are going to be joined by Gary Knowles, and he's going to tell us a little bit more and help us to understand why this is important. And in many ways, it's really easy to make a difference. It's just knowledge that we need. So I just want to say hello and hello. I was going to say welcome, but I feel like I'm in your house, Gary. Welcome.
Nice to be with you again. Thank you. And the topic today, and I don't want to do it just as a pitch. I want to do it as a classroom on the air.
Okay.
I want to give a lot of information. Because there's two DVDs they're getting, I believe, Kathy, not just one. But cancer is, as we know, it has been around a long time. And though we have made some progress, not in the treatment as much as in prevention, there has been a consciousness raising, well, I would say 40 years, that people on a healthy plant-based diet, people who exercise, people who deal with stress, people who have proper supplementation to their body's needs. These are all part of the way that we prevent cancer. But when it comes to the treatment, unfortunately, with a few exceptions, we fail. And I did the math recently, and I did it in an upcoming article I'm publishing about being honest about the war on cancer. Now, let's just say we take an average of 500,000 deaths. This year it'll be more. Last year it was more. And it's right behind heart attack and stroke as the number two killer. When you look at how many people die per year, and if you take 500,000 who died per year as an average. And let's go back 10 years. Before that, let's just take an average of 400,000. And if you go back and see how many people actually died over the last 30 years, even if we took 400,000, we're still 20 million people. So when 20 million people die in a war, that's a failure. That's not a success. And when you have the people dying have committed themselves 100% to using what they were told, chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, and indeed radiation and chemotherapy can shrink tumors. And the idea of chemotherapy is you kill as many cancer cells, hopefully with the stem cell in the cancer, and that way it doesn't grow back before you kill the healthy cells. But the trouble is you are killing healthy cells, and it's really devastating the immune system. But generally, people frequently don't just have cancer because there's certain commonalities. Now, there's certain lifestyle choices that will trigger a multiplicity of illnesses. For example, what is at the bottom of almost all or most diseases? Inflammation. Well, okay, what if every single product we consumed told us how many units of inflammation it would cause, the kind of free radical expression that damages cells? Well, most people wouldn't buy the products. So we're not told. We're not told that drinking alcohol in any quantity increases the free radicals and hence is highly inflammatory. But then it's inflammatory to the organs in contact. For example, when you drink coffee, you can end up with GERD or regurgitation of hydrochloric acid in your stomach coming back up into the very sensitive tissue of the esophagus. Hence, esophageal cancer is one of the major cancers because of coffee drinking. But then again, drinking also impacts stomach cancer. Now, it may start as E. pylori helicobacter, a bacterium, that we don't pay attention to. We take antacids, we take something to limit the pain. But in the process of limiting the pain, by limiting the hydrochloric acid, what your body secretes to digest food, do you ask yourself, well, what happened to the digestive process of the foods that I had consumed? Well, they stop. Then what happens? Partially digested pieces of food then go through the end sphincter. You have a cardiac sphincter, you have a pyloric sphincter, and one comes in, a flap opens in the stomach, allowing food to go into the stomach, properly masticated, properly chewed, is called bolus. Then with hydrochloric acid and enzymes, then the food is digested. And then by the time it's ready to pass out of the stomach into the intestine, it's called chyme. That should be like a thick potato soup, but smooth, because there is no real digestion of hydrochloric acid products in the rest of the intestine. In fact, the first 12 inches of the intestine, duodenum, that's where you deacidify. Well, if you don't have acid, then all you really have is the gallbladder secreting some bile, which helps break down some of the fats, and that makes it and the emulsification process easier. But then it gets further into the intestine, all these little villi, millions and millions of little tiny follicles are hanging off the intestine, and that's where your food's absorbed. But it cannot absorb large pieces of food. So as a result, we are frequently overfed and undernourished. It's not just what you eat that counts, it's what's metabolized, what's used and then eliminated. So then people end up with this phenomena of being overfed and still feeling hungry, but also being malnourished. And that's a problem. That's a huge problem, starting in kids and going right through to old age. So we have to look at our diet, and our diet is a strictly pro-inflammatory diet. If I handed you a chicken, if you're the average person, and said, go ahead, that's what you eat all the time, in your chicken nuggets and fried chicken, etc. Well, this is not what it's supposed to be. It's a live chicken. Yes, it is. But that's what you're eating. If I gave you a cucumber or a peach or an apple, You don't have to coat it in anything. You don't have to put artificial sweeteners, emulsifiers, and plasticizers. You just eat it. But all animal proteins, we have to change. So you got to pluck the chicken. You got to boil the chicken. That's what they do. They boil them to death, cut their throats, let them bleed out. And they frequently are so alive when they're boiled to death. And then they cut them up, depending upon what it's going to be used for. And then no one's going to eat that. Try eating boiled chicken once it's boiled. Put it on a plate, just like it is. Try eating a piece of medium to rare meat. No sauces, no salt and pepper, just meat on a plate. People won't like the taste of it. So as a result, we have food chemists do two things simultaneously, neither of which are we informed of in detail. One, they create seasonings that stimulate the appetite. Two, they create seasonings that taste good. And we can acquire those tastes, salty and crunchy, sweet and soft. But then they do their real alchemy. They create a way of enhancing the dopamine hits in the brain. What this means in lay language is that when you watch someone who is a meth addict, crack addict, coke, heroin, and marijuana, what you see is you see people risking their life to maintain a temporary high. Sometimes that high can be a matter of 5 or 10 minutes with methamphetamine. It can be longer with heroin, but after about 2 hours, it wears off. Now you go through a terrible withdrawal, and you can projectile vomit across the room. I know all this because I was head of addiction control at Trafalgar Hospital for a long time. I counseled thousands of people, and I approached it differently. I just didn't suggest methadone. I suggested detoxification and then asking the basic questions of why you chose that artificial high and what other ways could you get a natural high. In any case, I've seen people withdraw from everything, and it's an ugly sight. And yet people go right back out there and do it again until they die. And by the way, Kathy, how many people do you think died this past year from fentanyl overdose?
I don't know, but it could be in the 100,000, maybe.
It's over 100,000. 100,000.
Wow.
Have you seen any headlines about why 100,000 Americans died this year, 100,000 last year? And that's not including OxyContin. All right?
Mm-hmm.
There it was about the same numbers. So you're losing about 200,000 people in a year. And both of those are for addictive substances because they're giving them dopamine hits. It's killing the pain, and you feel euphoria.
But aren't these drugs that were prescribed to people for the most part?
Yes. Well, they're illegal also, and most of the fentanyl was taken illegally. But we're an over-medicated society. The drug companies did not lead the charge of showing we were over-medicated and dying from them. It took outside family members to pressure legislators to have then the governmental agencies that were responsible for this oversight to begin with begin to crack down on the Wexler family and others. They paid billions of dollars in fines, but were allowed to keep billions and billions more, making them one of the wealthiest families in America after they caused the unnecessary death of probably over 1 million people. But in any case, the point of my discussion now is that there's a large number of people, scientists, who are with malice aforethought creating a deception. And the deception is they have the ability to make food addictive. And they've done that successfully. And as a result of that, you frequently start to eat something, it tastes good, and you don't have an appetite mechanism to stop. Now, normally, with normal eating, you're full and you stop. But when you're addicted to the substances in the food without being told or without being on any label, it's not required. Because when you go into a fast food joint, you get some fried chicken. Are you getting monosodium glutamate? Are you getting other chemicals that you would not want in your body? Are you getting sugars and blended into the white flour? neither of which would be good for your health just by themselves. Are you getting excess amounts of sodium? A fast food meal can be up to 5,000 milligrams of sodium. In a nation that has a pandemic of high blood pressure, or what is called post-staple high blood pressure, meaning you're on medications for the rest of your life and you're suffering the side effects of the medications, but it's trying to lower your blood pressure. No, you're not told when you buy a sandwich how much sodium is in it, how many chemicals are in it, and that's not on the label.
So, Gary, I'm all of a sudden feeling so amazed and a little bit overwhelming that, you know, the food industry really is a drug pusher, and people don't realize.
Oh, it's totally criminal.
Don't
go light on it. These people are no different than the tobacco scientists, no different than the asbestos scientists, no different than the glyphosate scientists, Roundup at Monsanto, no different than the scientists who gave us Agent Orange and then denied 3.5 million GIs who were exposed to it, or the Vietnamese people who were exposed to it, that it had anything to do with all their deformities and cancer. No different than dioxin. I mean, I can spend all day telling you what I've researched and produced in my lifetime, over 800 articles, over 100 documentaries, over 50,000 hours of broadcasting, doing nothing but exposing corruption in different industries and promoting what you can do to stay healthy. So this is not an accident. This is intentional. When the seven heads of the big tobacco industry got before Congress and swore that they knew nothing about, and there was no science showing that there was anything addictive in their cigarettes or it would lead to cancer, the FDA held secrets, patent secrets, that they never divulged, but they knew about. That shows you something about the integrity of that swamp little beast of an agency. It's fully captured by industry. They knew that it caused cancer. They knew it was addictive. We didn't find this out from any government agency. They're too corrupt to be honest about anything ever. We didn't find this out about the industry itself or corporate America. They're in it for the greed.
Mm-hmm.
We found out by a whistleblower. And instead of heralding whistleblowers like Chelsea Manning, like Julian Assange, like all the others out there, we condemn them. We put them in prison. We destroy them. Isn't that ironic?
The person that exposes
the crime is penalized, and the American public totally removed from reality in cognitive disassociation of all reality, simply mumbles, gibbers, watches reality television, becomes ideologically pinned in to whatever radio or television or print personalities they're listening to, but never themselves take a step out of that conformity box to say, what is the truth of what I'm eating? What is the truth of what I'm drinking? What is the truth of what I'm spraying in my home and in my child's room? What is the truth about where my clothes are made? What is exploited in the process? What is the truth about payday loans, paying 1,000% interest if I can't afford the loan, it's rolled over and costs 10 times more than the item I bought? Why doesn't anyone help me? Why am I allowed to be so vulnerable to so many predators? And the answer is, welcome to America. That's what we are.
Yeah.
Now, and you know, that's who we are at every level. Every level.
So agree.
All right?
And see, Gary.
So now hold on. I'm not finished. I'm coming full circle.
Okay.
So when the cancer doctor tells you that we're going to give you a chemotherapy, you have the hope that it will work. The radiation will work. But when was the last time any cancer patient said to the doctor, "Doctor, please show me on PubMed, the Library of Medicine, the official repository of all that is legitimate, show me where this drug or this treatment was able to have a statistically significant improvement of survival and quality of life compared to a placebo, not compared to another drug like it." Because that's the game they play. And sometimes they'll say a 50% increase in life. But then you find out that the other drug they were comparing it to gave you 3 weeks of life, and this gives you 4 weeks of life. And in the process of having that extra little time, you have no hair, you have no immune system, you're cachexic, you're wasting away. So what bothers me is not the honest and diligent and humanitarian scientists and physicians who are trying to find real answers to cancer, because I believe that well-intentioned people if they're not able to think independently and look honestly, they will only see dead bodies everywhere, cumulatively. And if you're looking just in the short term, you're looking at 20 million dead cancer patients who did exactly what they were supposed to do. But then Google this. How many people die from the therapy? About 50%. And how many of those therapies cause cancer itself, including secondary cancers? Radiation and chemotherapies cause cancer. So is there any other way to fight cancer other than the potential of causing a secondary cancer, even if you reduce the tumors this year, and for a year a person says, good, I'm in remission, and boom, back it comes because you didn't change the underlying factor. You didn't radically change your lifestyle. Nothing about, you know, if you ever saw hospital food, especially hospital food, that people actually eat that crap, you'd say, well, hold on a second. You're giving me food that I ate that caused my cancer. Why aren't you telling me anything? Well, no, our dietitian. No, I'm a dietitian. I'm a registered dietitian. I have undergraduate and graduate and PhD and doctorate and postdoctoral fellowships in nutrition, human nutrition. I'm a clinician. I'm a research fellow, senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology for 33 years in a laboratory, 5 years beyond that, 38 years. I've done over 50 clinical studies on showing what diseases could be reversed using only lifestyle and behavior modification. These people have no knowledge of that. So on the one hand, I don't blame them because they're only doing what they've been told by Big Pharma to do. Here's a new drug, use it on this patient. So when the doctor says, well, we've done everything and nothing's working, however, we're going to try an experimental drug on you. Just know that you're going to die. I mean, that's it. But ask them to show me your success. Show me five patients who are alive and well 5 years after you treated them, who have no cancer, then I'll have some confidence that therapy you're about to ask me to undertake and risk my life is more than just my hope and faith in you. Because the cancer industry, for the people who survive, they take 100% credit. So if you had breast cancer and you were treated, they get 100% of the credit. What if you change your lifestyle? What if you begin to augment it with vitamin D and vitamin C and things that are known, like hyperbaric oxygen therapy, known to help kill cancer cells? That gets no credit. But it's worse because then they go out of their way to attack any natural alternative therapies. So if we have a war on something, wouldn't we want every different approach that has reasonable outcomes to be used? Because I can show you the thousands of articles on vitamin D, curcumin, and other herbs that will stimulate the body's natural killer cell activity and help prevent cancer and destroy cancer. But they won't show you that. So I wanted to get this out of the way first before I went to the good news. So that's the bad news. So if you think that everyone out there fighting cancer are using the best tools, they've got good ads, they show you smiling kids and smiling people, but they're not showing you what I believe should.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. And we are learning and listening to Gary Null as he talks to us about this amazing pack that we're offering you today.
Okay, so let's go to some good news that can give us some hope that there's a lot that we can do. Well, first, I've written about what's wrong with the wrong cancer and overcoming cancer, the five most powerful tools for fighting cancer. But there's a lot of good work in stem cell, it's a revelation, healing the root of cancer. Part of the problem with the conventional approaches of surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation is that they largely fail to address the complex biochemical factors from which malignancies arise. There's exciting new research, Kathy, into what is known as the stem cell theory of cancer. And it's revealing crucial insights about how we may be able to reverse tumor growth by targeting specific types of cells throughout the non-toxic and natural treatments. Scientists have long studied cellular genetic mutations that lead to abnormal carcinogenic cell growth, and the mechanisms behind the propagation of cancer cells are still not well understood. At least that's my opinion. However, recent discoveries suggest that a particular type of cell called a stem cell can play a pivotal role in the development of disease. Stem cells are undifferentiated cells, such as a neuron or a white blood cell. There are a variety of stem cells throughout the body, and they are essential to the formation and maintenance of healthy tissue. So operating in an organized fashion, stem cells are capable of dividing to create both more stem cells and specialized cells. Now, the conventional belief in mainstream medicine is that all cancer cells have the potential to grow and divide and to do so randomly. In contrast, the stem cell theory of cancer maintains that only stem cells ultimately create more cancer cells in the body, even though stem cells make up less than 0.05% of cells within a tumor mass. In recent years, stem cell theory has gained traction as studies further identified the significant role stem cells played in several forms of cancer. And why is the stem cell theory of cancer so important? If these particular cells are indeed the driving force behind tumor growth, we can develop treatments to selectively eliminate cancer cells, stem cells, without harming normal body tissue. It's critical to note that chemotherapy and radiation can kill rapidly dividing cancer cells. I accept that. But they often fail to kill the stem cells, which divide more slowly. And why these stem cells are difficult to combat with dominant conventional therapies remains a mystery. One hypothesis is that the stem cells may be able to repair damage to the DNA more effectively than other cancer cells. Another possibility is that the stem cells possess genetic mutations that make them resistant to orthodox therapy. Nevertheless, if we accept the validity of the cancer stem cell theory, it's easy to understand why mainstream statements and treatments about the normal treatment are unfortunately not accurate. So there's a lot being done now on this. But what are some of the things that can help the body? Because phytonutrients, or phytochemicals, same thing, which are natural compounds derived from plants, they support cellular health. So the good news is that we are already with a wealth of scientific evidence demonstrating the effectiveness of various chemical compounds, many found in our food, to safely target and kill stem cells. Researchers, activists, and a founder of the popular website GreenMedInfo, Sarah G, has created a list of these. For example, beta-carotene, blueberries, broccoli, cardamom, carotenoids, catechin, cruciferous vegetables, that's your broccoli, cauliflower, kale, that's all those. Those are all capable of directly impacting cancer cells. So again, do we eat these? Do we eat these on a regular basis? And if so, how do we eat them? Well, we should be eating at least 3 servings of cruciferous vegetables per day because they have chemicals like indole-3 carbonyl and isothiocyanates that are released when you eat your asparagus. When you eat you eat a radish, and it kills the cancer cells. Feverfew does the same thing. EGCG, that's green tea. Curcumin is good. Genistein, gingerol, which comes from ginger. Isoflavonoids, lycopene. These are all real, and these are things that you can do on your own. Mustard oil, N-acetylcysteine, piperine, quercetin, resveratrol, selenium, very important. All the sprouts, including alfalfa sprouts. You have the traditional Chinese medicine, what is called Kushen, K-U-S-H-E-N, injections, vitamin D. So the list, and I list these in the book, by the way, it shows you which of these really make a difference in helping prevent cancer, but also in dealing with cancer. And also I found 22,000 studies in PubMed on marijuana and its medicinal outcomes in helping people with different cancers. And there are certain kind of cannabis-containing oils that are known to be beneficial for different types of cancers, including brain cancers and lung cancers.
You know, it's amazing. When you were talking, I'm looking at the table of contents, and I'm like, I can't believe it. Almost everything you're saying is here in this, in the book that you created, Overcoming Cancer. So it's amazing to me that, you know, people will be able to really connect to what you're saying and be able to make those changes in their own life based on what you're teaching here. I think it's an amazing thing.
Thank you, Kathy. There's two basic overriding principles to try to help people realize how simple it is. One is, do no harm and avoid harmful foods and toxins. And that's not that difficult if you choose to be aware, eating fresh produce, having things that are not highly processed. Remember, almost everything in the American diet is highly processed. And we're talking about from pizzas to all the sandwiches you see advertised. For example, if you just take any sandwich that has meat in it, to cook the meat to kill the bacteria that otherwise would put you in a hospital or kill you, you create a byproduct. It's called a heterocyclic amine. It's carcinogenic. Creates a lot of free radicals, creates inflammation. Now, let's just say that you're having an average lunch. You're having a beer. If in the middle of the day, workplace, and you're having yourself a hamburger. Well, you've got the meat, which can cause, has no fiber, and was going to create inflammation and take a long time to digest. You got a bun that is pure carbohydrate. It's going to break down almost as if it were sugar. But in the browning of the bun, just no different than browning of a, let's say, a potato chip or a pretzel or a french fry or pizza crust, what you're getting is acrylamides. And these acrylamides also are highly inflammatory and carcinogenic. So in one sandwich, you already have two known very pro-inflammatory and destructive qualities. Throw in the alcohol, and that's another highly inflammatory and highly irritating to the liver, the kidneys, the very organ you need, the liver and the kidneys, for digestion elimination. Plus, you're not getting the fiber. So then you're also taking in items that are very toxic to the stomach. How many times have we seen ads where, oh, you ate this food and suddenly it's bad for you and it's... And you're upset, but you take an antioxidant. Oh, now you feel great. So the message is, don't worry about what you eat. Just buy an antacid product so that you can eat it. But it's harmful to you. Oh, we don't care about that. That's a part of the story we're not going to tell. So you have to make yourself aware to stay away from harmful foods and toxins, because the people out there want you to eat. More often than not, they want you to eat something that is not good for you.
You know, if I may, Gary, one of the things that you were pointing out, and I think we have a clip about this from the DVD, is that, you know, there's just so much greed in this whole industry of cancer, curing cancer, of the food industries, of the chemical industries, and it's, people seem not to be able to understand that these so-called authorities...
For more than 30 years, we were told that there was no diet link to cancer. Now we know that's not the case, that an improper diet, high in animal proteins and animal fats, refined sugars, indeed is connected as a causative factor.
You can have an excess of poor foods, such as foods with preservatives, processed foods, white flour, white sugar, and also foods that are too high in protein, high animal protein diet, those would be excesses. And you can have a deficiency of vitamins because you have this kind of diet, vitamins, minerals, important things that you need for health.
We need to recognize that when someone has cancer, it's when at least their immune system can no longer contain abnormal cell proliferation, which has many different causes. And our state of nutrition has direct effects on our immune system and other bodily functions as well. So that if we are, for example, have imbalances in our protein, carbohydrate, or fat intake, for example, too much fat, there have been correlations between too much fat and an increased incidence of cancer. Or genetically, we just may have different vitamin, mineral, and enzyme needs, which are not met by our current Western diets, you might say.
Chemicals that are added to the food, whether they're preservatives or colors or other kinds of flavoring additives, are often suspicious, and many of them have actually been shown to be actual carcinogens. So step one in avoiding carcinogens in the diet is to not eat any foods that have chemicals added to them. Organic foods are a very good way to accomplish this, because organic foods not only don't have chemicals added, they also are not grown with pesticides or with synthetic fertilizers that are carcinogens. So this is a good place to start. When you're buying foods that are prepackaged, read the label. If there's something on the label that you don't recognize, don't eat it.
Our genetics really are a throwback to the Stone Age. Our genetic makeup has changed little over the last 10 to 15,000 years. So we're consuming foods that genetically just don't work well. And an example of how the body might try to deal with that is by producing certain types of cancers, which are obviously a symptom of something else causing the cancer. It's important to realize that once someone discovers cancer, that there are other factors that have caused that cancer. Genetics are one thing, but we need to think that genetics also might mean that we have a much higher need for certain nutritional factors that we're not getting from our standard Western diets.
One thing to keep in mind is you have almost two scientific traditions. You have big science and little science. Big science is the expensive, well-funded clinical trials that appear to be definitive and that will sway medical opinion. But the people doing alternative therapies are people in the little science tradition. They don't have access to the money. A lot of their products are non-patentable, so they can't attract big money to support it. But they still produce some kinds of evidence. They have good series of case studies, and they have good retrospective outcomes analyses. So the evidence is really pretty good when you consider the political economy of cancer.
So let me give you the phone number to call, 212-209-2950. You can go to the website, give2wbai.org, and for your $100 pledge, you can receive this amazing package and the Gary Know Cancer Pack, which includes all of this research, but not just the research, also the solutions.
Benzene hexachloride, which is a known carcinogen in frankfurters, but also Dachshund. It's a carcinogen, and it can be contaminated with dioxin. And it's an irritant. It's a strong sensitizer. You also have Deldrin. It's carcinogenic. You have heptachlor, a carcinogen, neurotoxin, reproductive toxin. You have a hexachlorobenzene, a carcinogen. You have lindane, a carcinogen, neurotoxin, damages the blood-forming cells. Hormones, carcinogenic. You have antibiotics, some are carcinogenic and cause allergies. And by the way, then you have nitrites, and these interact with meat amines to form carcinogenic nitrosamines, which are a major source of childhood cancers. So mind you, all of what I just mentioned you can find in a frankfurter, and yet no one would know that. The same thing in a dairy product. DDT, a carcinogen, Dieldrin, a carcinogen, heptachlor, carcinogen, they're all in dairy products, yet you don't see that. And then the poultry industry is also just as bad, as is the seafood industries. So the only way to deal with this, just like dealing with alcohol and tobacco, is stop consuming them. So when you stop consuming them, then that's a good positive first step. But adapt a nutritious plant-based diet. And that's not difficult to do where you're getting healthy fats. You want to focus on alkaline foods because that helps to maintain a normal pH, now slightly alkaline pH of 7.2 to 7.5. And eating alkaline foods keeps the blood pH in its ideal range, which is important for the prevention and treatment of cancer. Ideally, the diet should consist of 80% alkaline-forming foods. And just to give you an idea of some alkaline-forming foods, you're talking about all your berries, apples, apricots, avocados, bananas, currants, dates, figs, grapefruits, grapes, kiwis, lemons, limes, mangoes, melons, nectarines, olives, oranges, papaya, peaches, pears, persimmons, pineapple, raisins, raspberries, strawberries, tangerines, and watermelon. The most alkaline-forming foods are lemons and melons. Your vegetables that are really good for you, artichokes, asparagus, sprouts, beets, bell peppers, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, celery, collards, corn, cucumbers, eggplant, endive, ginger, horseradish, kale, kelp, seaweed, mustard greens, okra, onions, parsley, potatoes, radishes, spinach, squash, tomatoes, watercress, and yams. Whole grains, whole still cut oatmeal, millet, quinoa, wild rice, all great foods. The beans, chickpeas, green beans, lentils, navy beans, kidney beans, fava beans, lima beans, peas, and soybeans. Nuts would be almonds, walnuts, cashews, pistachios, Brazil nuts, macadamia, hazelnuts, pecans. Your seeds would be chia seed, flax seed, pumpkin seed, sunflower seed, fennel seed, hemp, coconut, radish, and sesame. Now, the number one thing you should put in your diet would be the cruciferous vegetables. Kale, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, arugula, watercress, turnips, mustard plants, Brussels sprouts, and bok choy. And why? Because the cruciferous vegetables contain detoxifying compounds called indoles, I-N-D-O-L-A-S, and iso, I-S-O, thio, T-H-I-O, cyanates, C-Y-A-N-A-T-E-S, isothiocyanates, which have been proven to help prevent and reverse cancer, and juices as well. They also give you even more of the potent benefit. And your green foods, your wheatgrass, barley, grass, alfalfa, and blue-green algae, spinach, chlorella, spirulina, these are great for blood purifying because chlorophyll purifies blood and helps the body detoxify. And then red foods, all your reds, strawberries, watermelon, tomatoes, raspberries, tart cherries, cranberries, goji berries, they're high in nutrients that support the immune system and fight cancer, such as lycopene and carotene. And fiber is very important. You want to get about 40 grams of fiber a day, and olive oil is important. And, of course, green tea is just a superstar, especially if you have lung, esophageal, stomach, pancreatic, and bladder cancer. And animal studies have been shown to be very effective. Mushrooms are superstars because they stimulate, like the maitake, M-A-I-T-A-K-E, mushroom kills cancer cells by enhancing the activity of T helper cells. And research has shown that the maitake mushroom exerts a favorable effect on various types of cancer, including breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer. And shiitake, S-H-I-T-T-A-K-E, and reishi, R-E-I-S-H-I, mushrooms also have been observed to be extremely strong anti-tumor property fighters. Macrobiotic foods are good. Seaweeds are great. And spices, black pepper, cumin, really good. And they help the body. So they have anti-cancer benefits.
And you know what, Gary, is really, really wonderful about what we're talking about here, what you're sharing? In your offering of this book, Overcoming Cancer, you're teaching people how to make all that stuff taste good, and you're showing them recipes that they can really get into and understand how to combine certain things and how to add different things into their diet. And you know, I was looking at the barley with collard greens and leeks, and that reminds me of my grandmother and the kind of thing that she would cook, or the coconut nut rice, you know, people, is kind of a Caribbean influence, and the miso tofu soup is kind of an Asian influence. And it's not that, you know, I think sometimes people imagine that being healthy is hard, or you know, not fun. But you're showing us that it is really something that we can do. We can empower ourselves. We can get these ingredients. We can begin playing with it really in the kitchen and making food that's healthy, that's beautiful to look at with all these colors. And then we can begin to nourish ourselves through the visual, through the colors, through the taste, through the nutrients, so that people can look upon healthy lifestyle with such a different attitude. I think people need kind of an attitude change. And, you know, we don't need to just go for the fast food or go for the unhealthy food, and understand how healthy and how wonderful we can care for ourselves and each other when we begin to really use this material. And I feel that this is a real tool. It's a gift. And I just want to put it out there so that people can really have this. I mean, for those, there are people in my life that I want to have this package. The DVD, Cancer Alternative Approaches, and the book, Overcoming Cancer, because you go into the science. You explain. I mean, you're giving the information now, but people will have it to share and to really look at and to learn. And I wanted to, forgive me for interrupting, but I just wanted to invite everyone to make that pledge. It's a $100 pledge, and you get all this material. You get to go over it again and again. You have the recipes. You understand all the different kinds of therapies that are healthy and that we need to be concerned about. So please do make that phone call, 212-209-2950. Only a $100 pledge, and it will make a difference for each of us. You know, it's not just for the radio station. It's not just for Gary. I believe that this is life-saving. If I were facing this diagnosis, I would want to do this. But the reason that I'm feeling like I'm not that much at risk is because I'm doing a lot of this. We can do it ahead of the game and prevent us from getting sick. We can work with this, the healthy information, once we do have a diagnosis, and really make a difference. So forgive me for interrupting you, Gary, but I was getting so excited about what you're talking about, because this is really big in so many of our families, certainly my own. You know,
yours and mine. Mm-hmm, older brother died of cancer. Father died of cancer. Mother had breast cancer. And then taking synthetic hormone replacement therapy, died of a stroke. Now, they all contributed to their, unfortunately, their disease process, because they would never listen to me and never took my advice once. But that's, you know.
What can you do? But, you know, they say
you can't. And just shrug your shoulders.
Yeah, all you can do is put it out there. But there's so many people listening right now who can make a difference. I'm sorry.
By the way, what I'm suggesting also helps prevent cancer. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, I don't want cancer, and I'm not willing to do anything that caused myself to have to change anything, make any of my comforts, I have to give up. Then you're like Christopher Walken in The Deer Hunter in the last scenes, drugged out in a bar in Saigon, playing Russian roulette for no apparent reason, because life no longer means anything. If life means something to you, then honor it. If life means nothing to you, if you think somehow this is all just an existential experiment, then don't. But I'm interested in working with people, helping people and empower people who still want to prevent disease and who want to reverse disease or help themselves as best they can. And last week on my noon radio show, a woman called in, and I remember the woman from 20 years ago. 20 years ago, she had terminal cancer. She looked at what the oncologist said would be the likely outcome, which was not good, and she said, no, I'll pass. She called my office, I saw her, put her on a protocol, and 7 months later she had no cancer. The doctor was surprised, but didn't call me to find out what I had done. Jump ahead. The woman was in a car wreck. She had injured her back. So for about a year, she really didn't exercise. She didn't take care of her diet. So then she got sick again, and cancer came back. Once again, she calls, what can I do? Put her on the protocol, and now just 2 months on the protocol, the cancer's gone. This time she learned her lesson. First time she took it for granted. Never take it for granted. That's like a person that's morbidly overweight, risking your life. You lose all the weight, and now you say, ah, I can eat what I want because I've lost all that weight, as if it's not going to come back. It's going to come back. So there are certain lessons in life that we have to learn in order to even have the discipline to stick with the protocol. Now, also I go through all the nutrients that are specific for cancer, like alpha-lipoic acid and beta-carotene and the carotenoids, and what exactly do they do? So if I told you you need flavonoids, where are you going to get them? Vitamin K, the milk thistle, and glutathione peroxidase, superoxide dismutase, coenzyme Q10, grape seed extract, dimethyl sulfuride. So all these are in this book. There's lots of things, lots of guidelines. There's different therapies. So, you know, if you want an anti-neoplasm therapy, Dr. Brzezinski is in there. The Gerson therapy is in here. You know, all this is in here. Plus recipes, as she mentioned, and lots of recommended reading, and lots of peer review scientific literature supporting everything it's said in here. Hundreds of footnotes. Mm. Now, that's just part of it. Overcoming cancer, the five most powerful tools for fighting cancer. So that helps you. It helps you prevent, and then it helps you if you have it. But then there's more. Do you want to go over the other things they're getting as well?
We are running so short on time. I do want to do that, but I'd like to give out that number again just to get people calling in. We're down to the last 5 minutes. The number is 212-209-2950. You can go to the give2wbai.org website and make a pledge of $100 to support WBAI. So make that phone call now, 212-209-2950. And I believe that this is a life-changing, life-saving package that will benefit you, but it's heartbreaking when we see our family go through this. And like Gary said, your family's not going to listen to you. My family doesn't listen to me either. But when you can present them with the science, you know, then maybe they'll consider, you know, okay, Dr. Gary Noll is recommending these things, but he's not just talking. There's evidence, there's research, and also there's lifestyle things that you can do, you know, like this chapter on making use of herbal allies, how to weave all of this nutrition, all of the health into your life so that you can really prevent cancer, help to come back from having a diagnosis of cancer, and also empowering yourself and your family and politically to know how this came to be and how we have to make this overall change. 212-209-2950. Go ahead, Gary.
Let me jump into the other videos you're getting here. I spent a long time, about 2 years, finding the best people I knew who could help us understand cancer. And I filmed them. This is a long documentary. It goes on for hours. But at least then you will have the doctors that you could go to, the best therapies explained from multiple different perspectives. And it's preventing and reversing cancer naturally. It's an award-winning documentary. And you really need to have that. Because once you have this documentary, preventing and reversing cancer naturally, then you have tools to use that otherwise you would not. So this is important because all of us are going to meet people in our life, including family members and friends who have cancer. It does mean they'll take our advice. It means that we're one voice and we're not the strongest voice. We'll probably not be the first voice to go to. I frequently get calls from people who've tried everything orthodoxy had to do and failed. And they've been sent home, put their life in order. That's what they're told. You don't have a long time, maybe a couple months. Why don't you take this time, spend with your family, put your life in order, and imagine how that news impacts people. That's when they call my office. That's when I go to work trying to help them. And a high percentage of those people are alive and well 5 years later, with no cancer. So we have to understand, you've got to be proactive. So many Americans right now, because of COVID, but even before COVID, were passive spectators to everything in life. They had opinions, but they weren't out there doing their own homework. They weren't out there being self-sufficient and guiding themselves. So I've given you the tools to help you in preventing, and I've given you the tools and information to help you. in selecting the best process. Look, if there was an orthodox therapy that had no toxic side effects, that was not expensive, that really was safe and was effective, I would be the first to recommend it. After all, for the last 2 years, Kathy, have I not been recommending the FDA's 27 or 28 now FDA-approved off-label drugs like monoclonal antibodies and steroids and ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, et cetera. I didn't have a single alternative doctor on in the last 2.5 years, not one. I wanted to have only orthodox doctors who were pro-vaccine talking about their approach to COVID. But I found that there was an approach, and I wrote two articles on it that have been used a lot, showing you that there